Are you trying to squeeze the starting solid food stuff into your already busy schedule? Well, I have an all-in-one, done-for-you solution that's going to take the guesswork out of feeding your baby. My online program is called Baby-Led Weaning with Katie Ferraro. It contains all of my baby-led weaning training videos, the original 100 First Foods content library, plus a 100-day meal plan with recipes, like the exact sequence of which foods to feed in which order. So if you want to stop trying to piece all this feeding stuff together on your own, I would be honored if you would join me inside of the program. You can get signed up at babyledweaning.co/program.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Sesame could be used as a oil in a flavor matrix in a product. You could have sesame, ground sesame seed, or other sesame ingredients in flavors and spices within food products, and they didn't have to be labeled. So now there's an added level of protection for those that have sesame allergy by all of those ingredients have had to been pulled out of the generic grouping for flavors and spices in food labeling.
Hey there, I'm Katie Ferraro, registered dietitian, college nutrition professor, and mom of seven, specializing in baby-led weaning. Here on the Baby-Led Weaning with Katie Ferraro podcast, I help you strip out all of the noise and nonsense about feeding, giving you the confidence and knowledge you need to give your baby a safe start to solid foods using baby-led weaning.
Right after choking, the biggest barrier that holds parents back from trying new foods is the fear of allergenic reactions. And while the only way to know if your baby is allergic to a food is to actually introduce that food to them, it can be super confusing to know the best way to do this. And things have changed a lot when it comes to guidance about introducing allergenic foods to babies. Let's say, hypothetically, you had a baby more than 20 years ago, you would likely have been advised by your pediatrician that the Committee on Nutrition at that time advised that parents should avoid feeding babies dairy foods until 1 year of age, eggs until 2 years of age, and no peanuts, tree nuts, or fish until 3 years of age. And guess what? None of that was based on any actual research. We know a ton more about food allergies today. Not everything, of course, but new research and updated guidelines all point to early introduction of allergenic foods as the best way to lower your baby's risk of food allergy down the road. In fact, early introduction is the only thing that you can do to help lower your baby's risk of food allergy. But again, how to do that safely? Super confusing. So my guest today is working to help change that. His name is Bob Earle. Bob is the Vice President of Regulatory Affairs for FAIR. They're the Food Allergy Research and Education. They're the group that's online at foodallergy.org. Bob is also a dietitian with a deep knowledge of pediatric food allergies. He works in the area of food allergy labeling with the FDA. He does a lot of oversight of potentially allergenic food provision in the WIC program, as well as national school lunch programs. And there's been a lot of buzz lately about sesame. So sesame is the ninth allergenic food that was most recently added to the list that's now known as the top nine. So those are the nine foods that account for about 90% of food allergy. And it's been confusing because manufacturers are saying that their products, quote, may contain sesame when they actually don't have sesame. So Bob is going to help us get to the bottom of that because I think that this has been a really confusing situation for consumers and for food allergy advocates. So before we dive into the episode, take a quick second. Please subscribe to this podcast if you're not already doing that because I want both of the weekly episodes that I release to show up in your feed. I do a mini baby-led weaning training episode every Monday and then a longer feeding expert interview each Thursday. So please subscribe. If you've got a friend who's starting solid foods too or a family member who's confused about some of this baby feeding stuff, please tell them about the show because your word of mouth recommendations mean everything to me. So with no further ado, I want to bring on Bob Earle from FAIR at foodallergy.org. He's going to give us a total update on what we need to know about food allergies, including reading labels, some really exciting research that's just beyond the horizon, and then going to help us figure out this little sesame labeling situation. Here's Bob.
Katie, one of the things that's just really been amazing throughout my career has been the amount of time I've been able to spend and devote on food allergy as an issue. It's a huge passion of mine. while I don't have food allergy and I have friends with kids with food allergy, it's always been very important and very top of mind. But back when I started over 25 years ago working on food allergy, the advice was avoid, avoid, avoid. And now it thrills me to no end that we talk about early introduction of food allergens, eat many of them, eat them often, and now it has been proven to reduce the risk of developing food allergy. So what I really am most excited about is the fact that with early introduction of food allergens, we could eliminate food allergy within a generation or drastically reduce it.
Well, I am kind of mirroring what you say, but I remember when I was in, you know, learning to become a registered dietitian and doing my undergraduate work, we used to learn, like, the party line was, Committee on Nutrition said infants should stay away from dairy foods until 1 year of age, eggs until two, and peanuts, tree nuts, and fish until 3 years. And you and I were chatting before the interview that, like, that was just, like, it was fabricated. It wasn't based on any research, on any, you know, peer-reviewed publications or standardized guidelines. It was like, we just didn't know. And things have changed. As you said, like, in literally in one generation, we know so much more about preventing food allergy. And I know a lot of what FAIR does is really just awareness about food allergy. But I think parents don't realize how powerful of a role they play in helping to prevent food allergy. Could you talk a little bit about that? Because our parents listening are primarily caregivers and parents of babies 6 to 12 months of age, maybe don't realize the power that they have with early introduction.
It's really interesting that a researcher from the United Kingdom had this hypothesis of why we didn't see peanut allergy in the population in Israel. And what it turned out to be is that, like, we have cheese puffs here. They eat these extruded peanut puffs called bamba. And it's basically similar to a first food like an oat ring would be in the United States in the infant diet. And so they conducted a controlled experiment with individuals that consumed bamba puffs and those that didn't. And what they found is a dramatic reduction in the development of peanut allergy. And so now there have been other studies beyond the LEAP study that have looked at introducing egg and milk. And FAIR now is helping sponsor a large study that is looking at introduction between 4 to 6 months of age and a year, and then continuing on, 8 different food allergens. And our hope is that we can move well beyond the official recommendations from the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, that with the solid science that supports early introduction of peanut, to really dig in and get pediatricians and other internal medicine, family physicians, all the healthcare providers that provide guidance when it is time to start introducing complementary foods, to do it with food allergens and do it often and keep it going.
And I think that's so important because it is frustrating, right? When you're a parent and you're looking and you're looking at the evidence and the research and it's like, more information is needed. It's like, we have very good evidence for early introduction of peanut. We have decent evidence for introduction of egg and cow's milk. And for the people like, well, what about the rest of them? It's like, well, there's no known benefit to withholding the introduction of those foods. And I think that's what parents sometimes they'll say, well, Katie, like, I'm scared my baby's going to have an allergic reaction. So I'm just not going to do any of these. And it's really working to change that narrative of like, no, that's not the answer. We can't just sit by and hope our babies don't get food allergy. Introducing these potentially allergenic foods early and often appears across the board to lower the risk of food allergy, but you need that hard and fast data to back it up. So I'm curious, you know, when will those results be published available, or, you know, how long is this study?
So back in 2020, when the most current version of the dietary guidelines for Americans was released, we were thrilled beyond belief that, and I know the exact page number, it's page 58, that contains the recommendations on early introduction of peanut. And so the study that's underway that FAIR is helping support, that's looking at 8 food allergens to introduce beginning around 4 to 6 months when complementary foods and an infant's ready for them. We're hoping that within the next 12 to 24 months that we have the study completed, and hopefully then we can just abandon the peanut only and just say, introduce food allergens early and often and keep it going. And we can do more for children's health than I think we even know yet.
Hey, we're going to take a quick break, but I'll be right back. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. If you've been thinking about giving therapy a try, BetterHelp is a great option. It's a convenient, flexible, affordable, and entirely online experience. All you do is just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can also switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I used to think therapy was just for people who have experienced major trauma. But therapy can help you be at your best no matter what you're going through. So whether it's to learn new positive coping skills, set more realistic boundaries, or just show up as a better version of yourself, BetterHelp is here to help. Therapy can help you find what matters to you so that you can do more of it. If you want to live a more empowered life, therapy can help you get there and BetterHelp can help you. Visit betterhelp.com/weaning today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/weaning and get 10% off your first month.
Okay, now you're talking about the eight, but I was going to ask you about sesame, which is the newest of the potentially allergenic foods to be added to the list. Was it not included in the FAIR study because that protocol got approved before sesame was added to the list? Or what's the rationale for doing
actually,
eight versus
sesame
nine?
Actually, sesame is in the study.
Oh, it is. So which one's not?
Fish and shellfish are not in the study.
So that's 9 minus 2. Wouldn't that be 7?
That's true, but there are multiple different tree nuts in the study.
Gotcha. Okay, cool. And that's the other question. Parents like, Katie, you know there's like 76 types of tree nut. Do I need to do them all? Like, and again, a lot of this is, we need more research, we need more data, but parents are like, well, I need to know like about feeding my baby right now. So I appreciate you working to kind of elucidate some of this. And I will certainly be looking forward to those studies. We were talking a little bit about history, you know, and how the medical community's understanding of food allergy prevention has changed in the past 20 years. You mentioned, you know, LEAP, the LEAP study, which shows us that the early introduction of peanuts can help reduce the risk of peanut allergy down the road. But then if you look at some other data, we know that pediatricians are not necessarily, like, the message is not trickling down to the baby well checks, where there's a lot of things you got to talk about when you're at a 4-month check. But have you guys considered how you're going to be introducing peanut? It's not necessarily happening. And I'm curious what FAIR is doing to help get the message out there more. Like, having the research is one thing, but having the parents hear it from their doctor, like, oh, I got to be doing this. And then how do I do it safely? That's another thing. Where are you guys on that?
Great question, Katie. We've done a whole lot on this topic and we continue to do more. It's absolutely critical. It's, again, we're breaking old habits that are 20 years old or more of changing from avoid to introduce early. So FAIR has, with joining forces with food allergists, pediatricians, we have a prevention initiative that FAIR has started on early introduction of peanut. And we also have developed for lay healthcare givers, let's say like dietitians like you and me that work in the WIC program, that can, we have a module that is 4 pieces that talks about the basics of food allergy, how to identify it, how to work on management of it, and the final section is on promoting early introduction. But old habits die hard. And
yeah,
so it's going to take a long time to get individuals, you know, that physicians that rightly so, or even maybe you and I as dietitians trained back when it was the norm to avoid.
But we still have, there are parents who come into our program and are like, my doctor told me not to feed egg white until age 1. And I was like, what should I do? I was like, you should get a new pediatrician because that advice is more than 20 years old. Like, we know with the EAT study that the early introduction of eggs, you want to introduce that protein early and often. And that telling parents to wait, you're scaring them. And there's no rationale, there's no reasoning, there's no data to support waiting. And you're right, we're changing the entire mindset from avoid to void to early introduction in one generation. But if the healthcare practitioners aren't on board and hearing the message, it's not going to get out there to the parents.
You're absolutely correct. And it's what we need to do, and it's not going to happen overnight. But we're trying to accelerate it. The allergist community, the two biggest organizations that represent food allergists in the United States, have a joint statement out that their guidelines are to feed egg and peanut. And we want not only everyone, we have to look at this across the population. We want to make sure that both those that have health insurance see pediatricians for well infant visits, and those that participate in programs like WIC and Medicaid, that the word has to get out, because this can't be a those that have and have not issue. We have to be able to get 100%
agree with you.
The information across the board to the underserved communities in the United States, and encourage all caregivers to be talking about early introduction.
And if I may, not that you're looking for suggestions, but as a dietitian who does a lot of work with the state WIC associations and working on modernizing infant feeding curriculum, it's all good and well to talk about the importance of this, but the WIC food package does not provide a peanut food for infants. There is no peanut in the 6 to 12 month package. And think how long it took to get juice reduced in the WIC package, for God's sakes. Like, these things in our professional generation will probably not happen, but education is key. I think it's good that WIC is talking about this. Half of all babies born in this country are in the WIC program. Like, this is 50% of the babies not getting the actual peanut foods that they need to safely introduce peanut to their baby, because we can't do sticky globs of peanut butter as a choking hazard. We can't do the thick globs of nut butter, but there are ways to make peanut safe. And I think that's where, you know, dietitians, we're putting this episode out in National Nutrition Month and celebrating the work that dietitians do. There's a lot of work that still needs to be done. And of course, WIC is a supplemental nutrition program. The understanding is not that 100% of the food that the baby eats comes from the program, but for God's sakes, we have so much data about the importance of this allergenic food. Why can't it be in the food package? And, you know, maybe when we're dead and gone, it will be.
It's a conundrum, and we'll see what happens when the final rule comes out in the next several months. We have continuously educated WIC staff and advocated for peanut to be included in the infant food packages. And you're right that half of the infants born in the United States are on the WIC program and or participate in Medicaid. And so we'd love to have both programs support early introduction of food allergens. And we're working and having dialogue, but then with Medicaid, it's a state-by-state-by-state discussion that has to be had. The other piece that's really important on WIC is that the food packages for children and mothers need to have better substitutions for those that have food allergy. So you want to be able to maybe handle the substitutions and not be so rigorous in the structure of the foods that are in the food package, to be able to accommodate, to ensure that you're really delivering the right nutrition to those that already exist and have food allergy.
I want to switch gears and ask about sesame. So sesame is the most recent add to the list of major potential allergenic foods. It used to be the big eight. Now it's 9 foods. Tell me a little bit from a historical standpoint. What changed that caused sesame to elevate in importance, or why was it added to the list? Does it have to do with sesame allergy being on the rise, or the United States just finally catching up to what other countries have been doing? What's the history there?
Well, there are over 1.6 million individuals in the United States that have sesame allergy. And with other food allergens, we've been seeing a rise over the last decade, rather than what we can do now to hopefully turn it around. So our initiative was to get sesame as the 9th allergen. But as you note, we're behind on the total number of allergens requiring labeling in the United States. Canada has had sesame for a decade or more before the United States. They also have mustard and molluscan shellfish like clams and oysters and such. The European Union has an even broader list, and there are different lists in Australia, New Zealand. We'd like to see it catch up. One of the barriers to this has been that the original list of 8 was defined by the law, the Food Allergen Labeling and Consumer Protection Act that was passed in 2004. So now we have the 9th allergen. One of the things in the FASTER Act that added sesame as allergen number 9 requiring labeling was it required FDA to develop a regulatory approach for the addition of new allergens. But let me turn and talk a little bit more about sesame and some of the benefits of why sesame was a good addition, and what are some of the issues that there may be some misconceptions with your viewers about? So when sesame could be used as an oil in a flavor matrix in a product, you could have sesame, ground sesame seed or other sesame ingredients in flavors and spices within food products, and they didn't have to be labeled. So now there's an added level of protection for those that have sesame allergy by all of those ingredients have had to been pulled out of the generic grouping for flavors and spices in food labeling. And that gives more disclosure in ingredient labeling and in contained statements that we see on the label. The one downside to it is what we have seen in the U.S. baking sector, where bakers that produce both sesame seeded products as well as plain products have actually chosen to be safe to lower their risk of having a recall to adding intentionally sesame flour in their plain bakery products, which has really greatly limited the choices out there for our community that has sesame allergy.
And just to clarify, they're doing that so that they're in compliance with the statements instead of, because you can't say you're producing a sesame-free bun if you also produce it in a sesame-containing facility. Is that correct?
Well, there are controls that could be put in place in facilities that make both types of buns. You could have dedicated equipment for baking plain buns. And we've seen a huge success where the supplier for breadsticks for the Olive Garden had breadsticks that after the 1st of January of 2023, when the FASTER Act was fully implemented, that the breadsticks then had to provide an advisory through Olive Garden that the breadsticks now contain sesame with the addition of sesame flour. Olive Garden heard loud and clear about it, that it was not something that favorites of their restaurants liked. And they turned around and they rebid out to other manufacturers. And within the last 4 months or so, they've been able to have sesame-free breadsticks again, which is a great win for our community. And I really applaud a restaurant chain like Olive Garden for using its power to procure foods to do the right thing.
Hey, we're going to take a quick break, but I'll be right back.
Hey there, I'm Dylan Lewis, one of the hosts of Motley Fool Money. Each weekday on Motley Fool Money, we talk through the business news you need to know and the stories moving stocks on Wall Street. On weekends, we dive into the industries shaping tomorrow and host the experts, authors, and executives that understand them. Tune in for insights, a long-term perspective on investing, and of course, stock ideas, plenty of them. To quote a listener, it pays to listen. Check us out and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
What do you think is the most important message for parents of babies to hear about food allergy prevention? Is there, you hear the stories in the news, and I think sometimes it's kind of confusing, and why do we have different lists, and how come my older doctor doesn't talk to me about this stuff? As someone who has been working in the food allergy space as a dietitian for over 30 years, what is that takeaway message for parents?
I think the takeaway is that we need to change the old habits and the old conversation. And just as you think that it's time to give a child applesauce, oatmeal, oat rings, and those types of things, carrot puree and other vegetable purees, that it is just standard that you feed the biggest variety of complementary foods possible, including food allergens, and not to worry about it because it is shown to be effective with very sound science.
So Bob, what information and or education can FAIR provide for families who are interested in learning more about food allergy prevention? And then where's the place like that they go to learn more?
Well, FAIR has huge amounts of information. I mentioned earlier in our discussion that we have our prevention initiative. That would be a place where parents could take that information to their doctor and say, hey, this is what we need to be doing now. Also, we have a Food Allergy Academy. While that can be for people that are involved in food service or health professionals and registered dietitians like you and myself, that a lot of that is free and provides great information. So, you know, others can get the word out. We're at foodallergy.org, and please visit us.
And I will put a plug in for the registered dietitians who are listening. I took your advanced pediatric food allergy course that Karina Venter and Marion Groach taught, and it was top notch.
And if you want to put in another plug, is the co-branded FAIR and Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics Health Professionals Manual.
Oh, I have that as well. I have it right here. I reference it all the time. It's an amazing manual. Well, we will stay tuned. Thank you so much, Bob, for bringing all of this information and your advocacy. And I really appreciate your time and sharing this with our audience, because it is an important message and we should hear it from the authorities. And you guys definitely are over there at FAIR.
Thanks much, Katie. It's been great chatting with you.
Well, I hope you guys enjoyed that interview with Bob Earle from FAIR. He's online at foodallergy.org. They're a wealth of information. If you ever have questions about food allergy, start your search at foodallergy.org. I will put all of the resources that Bob mentioned on the show notes for this episode. It's also going to be in the description below where you're listening to, or go online to blwpodcast.com/418. And a special thank you to our partners at Airwave Media. If you guys like podcasts that feature food and science and using your brain, they've got a lot of good ones over there at Airwave. All of our shows are there too, but we're also online at blwpodcast.com. Thanks so much for listening. I'll see you guys next time.
Do you find it hard to sleep at night? Then the Calm Cove podcast can help you sleep deeply all night long. Calm Cove has deeply relaxing meditation music and ambient sounds like ocean waves and crackling fires. All of our episodes are designed to help you relax and to fall asleep fast. Calm Cove is brought to you by the team behind Sleep Cove, the sleep podcast that consists of spoken word hypnosis, meditation, and stories. So if you want to listen to a beautiful soundscape tonight, search for Calm Cove on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, and see how we're helping millions of people relax and go to sleep every night.